Hello, hello, everyone. Welcome back. So if you're new to me, I'm Shua Allegra, the founder of Grace and Hope Consulting, where we empower people to achieve mental and emotional wellness, reach their full potential, and live fulfilling lives. So everything we do here evolves around resilience. And this year, I'm inviting some new friends to expand on that conversation on resilience, and of people who've been through hardship and are rising above it and have some wisdom to share with the rest of us so that we can also have the tools and strategies to address our own challenges. So today here, I have Danny with me. Thank you so much for being here with me to have this very important conversation.
Thanks for inviting me. I'm thrilled to be here.
Awesome. So if you don't mind just jumping in and share a little bit of who you are and what you do.
Well, I am currently a disabled retired person who has come through quite a life of adventure. I call it my journey. I come from the foster care system in my early years. My family was broken. We had a broken home. I'm the oldest of six children. And so I was about 9 or 10 when the divorce occurred. It was back in the 60s. I've been around a couple of minutes, you know, and my mom, of course, got all the kids because back then you always went to the mom. Mm-hmm. She got the family household. She was got pregnant when she was 15. I was born when she was 16. By the time she was 22, she had six kids. By the time she was 28, she was divorced. Mm. And it was chaos. There was violence, physical, verbal violence. She struggled being in the 60s as a single mom with six kids.
Yeah.
Had a rough time of it. And we went into what they call kinship care. We went to relatives' homes. Mm-hmm. They split mm-hmm. us up for a while. That didn't pan out. My mom, the relatives took us thinking she was going to get her act together and get on her feet. Well, because she didn't really get to live her life much because she was, you know, a mother from 16, when she got a little bit of freedom, she went out and took advantage of it and was going to enjoy mm-hmm. her life for a while, right? Well, we wound up in a group home, an orphanage. And then from there, we were parsed out two by two in foster homes. Mm. I'm not sure how far you want me to go into this story because there's more.
But that's a good place to even pause there.
Yeah.
So what age, again, I know you mentioned kind of age where the divorce happened and all that, but what age were you then placed into foster care?
By the time I got to foster care, we went to the group home. It was 1968, 69. So mm-hmm. I was 14, 15.
Okay.
So it was 2 to 3 years for the kinship care and the group home. And then I was 15 when I went into foster care.
Okay.
And my youngest sister, who was 6 years younger than me, was at that time 8 or 9. So she had come through those 3 or 4 years being, you know, 5, 6 years old when, mm-hmm. you know, when the major trauma, the major chaos was unfolding.
And so from the age of 15, so when you enter foster care, but like you say, like the trauma, all the challenges started prior to that, you know, this was just another place, right? And I'm sure there was many others. So like, how long were you in the foster care system? And how many homes? I'm afraid to ask you.
Yeah, well, fortunately, I was in the foster care system probably for about 1.5, 2 years. All told, from the divorce to the kinship to the group home to foster care, that was about a 5-year span, okay? So about 1.5 years in foster care. And toward the end of that year, during that 1.5 years, my parents' visits were sporadic. There were times when there was no shows, right? And so mm-hmm. we're waiting for visitation weekend to come up. and nobody showed up. And my little brother, who was staying with me at the foster home I was at, was sitting on the front porch just crying his eyes out. It was the only time I ever saw my foster mom, who to me was a saint. I mean, mm-hmm. she had so much patience and so much love, and she was just always there. The only time I ever saw her get angry is when one of the parents did not show up for visitation. So during that time, I was, like I said, 15 years old. And my siblings were scattered around the city. So we mm-hmm. couldn't really walk to see each other. Plus they were younger, a little bit younger. It was, the neighborhoods were a lot safer back then than they are in today's world. So I took a job at 15 years old. Being the oldest, I had to take care of everybody, you know. Right. That's the way I was raised. I was the second in command there after Dad mm-hmm. left. So I took a job as an ice cream salesman, where they used to have those push carts with the bells that ring before the trucks came around. And I worked all summer, and I saved my money at 15 years old, and I bought my brothers and sisters bicycles, used bikes, because I couldn't afford new ones. Mm-hmm. So I bought used bikes so that we could ride to each other and see each other or meet each other at a park someplace or whatever. And so that was part of the early resilience to figure out that, you know what, I'm not going to take this lane down. Mm-hmm. And if my siblings are hurting, we're going to figure out a way to get together. And so we did that. Then toward the end of the year and a half, I had heard that two of my sisters, the house that they were staying in, wanted to adopt them. Mm-hmm. And I panicked, because it was like, oh no, what's going to happen? Our family's going to get broken up, and I'll probably never see them again, you know? So I cried out to God, you know, help us, help us. What are we going to do? And boy, I'll tell you, it was like, I can't remember if it was like 2 or 3 weeks. It was some period of time. My dad shows up at my mm-hmm. foster home, and he said, not to worry. I called the caseworker and I complained. Mm-hmm. You can't do this. We're supposed to be together. Mm-hmm. How can this happen? You know, what can I do? I've got to be able to do something about this. Yeah. So she said she would dig into it. And in a couple, 3 weeks later, my dad shows up and he says, don't worry, I have gotten the money. I have repurchased the home that was, our house was condemned. When we left the house, I'm leaving a lot out. When we left the house, there were rats that were the size of cats running through our living room when we watched television at night. It was that bad, okay? We were eating Korean War surplus food. Because you didn't get food stamps, you couldn't go to the grocery store. You went to the government warehouse and you got the government overflow food, right? And so dad shows up. He says, I got the house back. It's going to take me a while to repair all the damage and get the place inspected. Mm-hmm. He said, but there is nobody getting adopted. Your sister's not going anywhere. And I'm going to get you and your brother out first. You guys will help me rebuild. And then as we can get the other bedrooms done in the house, we'll get the rest of the family together. So that took some time. We did get back. So we did get reunification, which is the goal of foster care, right? Unfortunately, the reunification back then didn't have too many qualifications. Dad, who was the alcoholic and was the physical and verbal primary abuser, never got any help to my knowledge. I don't think he ever went to any training or into any of those kinds of programs. But you know, he made his commitment, he had a good job, he had the money, he could, you know, he could take care of things, and he got the house back in order. So boom, he was approved, right? Well, he got all six of us back. And I was by this time 16 years old, and we were all coming home from school, and Dad was like an hour and a half behind us getting out of work. So we're all at home. And of course, this is the same neighborhood where the house got trashed and condemned. So the neighbors are a little suspicious of what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently somebody called, child welfare, and they talked to my dad, and he had to get a nanny. Couldn't leave mm-hmm. these wild kids alone, right? And so he got a nanny, wound up marrying her. It was a friend of his from the Wonder Bar that he met. Mm-hmm. And she was an alcoholic too.
Oh.
And it didn't take long after they got married before the arguments resumed,
mm-hmm.
the physical violence resumed, and the chaos was back in full swing. He wow. broke her jaw. They were married for 30 years. He wow. broke her jaw 3 times in 30 years. And we kept asking her, why don't you leave him? She goes, I can't leave him. I love him and I have nowhere else to go, you know?
Wow.
So that was really hard on all of us because mm-hmm. we had come out of that violence.
Now we're living that trauma all over again.
We're living it again. Mom is nowhere around. When she heard that Dad got us all back, she did move back to town. We found out she moved north. Probably about 100 miles north while we were in the orphanage in the foster care. Mm-hmm. Well, as soon as she heard Dad got us back, boom, she's back. You know, all of a sudden, what are you doing with my kids, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so she hated my stepmother with a passion. Whenever she could, she went and made their life miserable. So that just made things worse, of course.
More trauma, right?
Then yeah. she decides she wants to get some of us back. So she gets a job, unbeknownst to us, and we didn't find it out for many, many years later. When Dad got the house back, she went and fought him about it because it was her house, even though it got mm-hmm. condemned and she lost it. So she made him pay off part of the house to her. He had to buy her out.
Mm.
And she took that money and opened a pizzeria with it. My family was Italian on my mom's side.
Mm.
So struggle back and forth. Finally, at 17 years old, I threw my arms up and I said, enough. They went on a camp out, my dad, my stepmother, and my siblings. They went on a camp out for the weekend. I had to work because I took a job at high school co-op, you know,
mm-hmm.
Internship, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And I went to a talent show because I was very interested in music and I wanted to be a famous singer someday. So I went to this talent show and I met some people and they invited me to their home, 100 miles away in Cadillac, Michigan.
Wow.
And I told them my story on the way to their home. And I just met these people, right?
Mm.
But they had a teenage daughter who sang like Tammy Wynette. And I was doing Elvis. And apparently Daddy saw dollar signs with Tammy and Elvis doing duets together, singing. So anyway, they offered to take me in. And you know what? I said, absolutely. Get me out of here, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So they drove me back to from Cadillac to Bay City, Michigan. I packed everything I owned in 3 paper bags,
mm-hmm.
3 bags full. And now they throw all your stuff in plastic garbage bags, but
yeah.
And so I moved away. That was my luggage, was 3 paper grocery bags. And I left my dad a note on the telephone that was on the wall in our dining room, which he had ripped off that wall many times over the years. When my mom was going to call the police, he'd rip the phone off the wall.
Mm-hmm.
Before cell phones, folks, this was a while ago. And I put a note on the phone. I said, you've done enough. I'll take it from here.
Mm-hmm.
And I left home and never moved back.
Wow. And I can't even imagine, you know, as I, a lot of things I do a lot of work around trauma and supporting families as well, and just the impact of trauma and the impact of life, you know, mental health. And I cannot imagine how how much you and your sibling been through, you know, from the home to home to, you know, the challenges, the abuse that's happening in the home with your mom, and then the transition, you know, from multiple homes, so now have a stable home, and then you're back at the home you had, and then more violence follows. Yeah. And so for all of that, like, where did you find your strength, the drive to keep pushing through, and even to pursuing, you know, your talents, and, you know, and finding the strength to leave?
I leaned on God a lot. I was very fortunate, in my opinion, that as we were growing up in the early years, my mother's mother, Grandma, who was just my favorite person in the whole wide world, because I was her first grandchild, because Mom was so young when she had me. And Grandma and I were just like that. She was a devout Catholic, went to church every Sunday, you know, sang in the choir and all that kind of stuff. And so I loved music. She loved music. My mom was absolutely insane about Elvis. So I had Elvis around me all the time. And I loved God and I loved music. And the two of those helped get me through, because I could pray to God. I could call on Him. I could sing wherever I was. They couldn't take the song out of my heart. And so even in the orphanage, they put us in a Catholic orphanage. So when we were dropped off that day, it was kind of crazy, because, you know, Mom's saying, this is a better place for you than what I could provide right now. And we walked up those steps. It was one of those huge brick buildings like you see in the movies. I mean, it was huge. And it was in Saginaw, Michigan, 800 Howard Street. St. Vincent's home, right? And it had like 15 steps going up to this brick building with this huge cement porch and these great big huge oak doors. And when they opened, there's like four Catholic nuns standing there in their blue and white habits. I don't know if you remember those old habits where they were totally covered up and they had a little little white band, and they had these blue trailing bonnet things. So we're leaving chaos, we're leaving the condemned home, and we're being left by our mother, but we walk in and there's a bunch of nuns there and priests. So it's like, this isn't so bad, you know. And then within a few hours, we all had brand new clothes. They were feeding us hot meals with fresh food. Wasn't out of a can. It wasn't powdered milk, you know, stirred up with lumps in it, which we were drinking. So it wasn't so bad, right? So I got my courage in bits and pieces. At the orphanage, I wanted to be close to God. So I volunteered to be an altar boy to help with the masses, with the church service. And folks, I literally went to church every day of the week and twice on Sunday. So that's where I got my strength and my comfort. And one of the nuns was Irish and was always singing. So Sister Dorothy was her name. And so we hit it off really well. And when I was in grade school, our teacher, one of our principal, was Irish. And during March, here we are in March recording this, she just loved to play the piano, and she sang all the Irish tunes. Tour Lura Lura, Danny Boy, you know, When Irish Eyes Are Smiling. We did all those Irish songs. And so I'm singing those with this nun in the orphanage, and just, you know, it was just awesome. So I look for moments. I've always been a person who looked for the silver lining. You know, there's always something good in everything that happens, even though it's chaos, even though it's tragedy. You know, there's a lesson to be learned. There's something in one of my life's mottos now that I've written in my documentation that, like you said, we'll talk about. I wrote a book, and the whole thing is that life is a journey, right? So don't panic, because whatever's happening to you now is going to pass, and you can learn your lesson from it. There's something to be learned And it's just another stop along the way on life's journey.
Wow. And now with what you are comes to mind, just again, the importance or even the impact of environment, right? Because in one environment, when you're home with the violence and all the transitions, you know, it was unstable and it created fear, a lot of anxiety for kids. Like, I don't know if I want to come home, who's getting hurt, right? All of that, and it definitely was unhealthy. And then you go to a new environment where others could have seen, oh, my mom is like, you know, just giving me up. But she did the best she could at that moment, right? This is a better place for you. And so it sounds like you took that as an opportunity and embraced the environment you're in, you know, the faith that was being cultivated there, you know, you embraced it and use it as a strength to help you through that challenging time. And, you know, and then connecting with the nun who loves music, you know, and still that love of music in you. And those two things, the faith and the music that you found in the environment that, you know, others could have seen as like, oh, it's abandonment. You know, I've been rejected by my family. You embrace that and use it as strength to keep moving forward. That's very powerful.
It is awesome, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it's powerful. Yeah. Wow. Let's get the book here. Now, well, books in plural. So, you know, you're 17, you leave home, you know, you have your own life to live, right? And then now you have these books. So tell us about your books.
Well, I have to confess something just real quick, and then we'll fast forward to the books.
No problem.
There was a good thing that happened about my stepmom. She really wasn't an all bad person, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, there were good moments. And that's the thing about chaos and violence and abuse is it's a roller coaster ride. There's good days and there's bad days, right? Mm-hmm. Well, you shouldn't be having those kinds of bad days, first of all, right? Because parents are supposed to be there to love and nurture you and comfort you and support you and encourage you. Mm-hmm. Well, we didn't get that, but I did get my first guitar from my stepmother who had compassion on me and saw the love I had for music. And I got my first guitar. I wound up over the years, I performed for 45 years. Wow. I made it to Las Vegas. I made it to recording studios. I recorded music. I recorded albums. I wound up writing original songs. I did do Elvis, and I even got to meet the guy who co-wrote Heartbreak Hotel for Elvis Presley. His name is Tommy Durden, and I actually got to perform live on stage with him at the Royal Oak Music Theater in Detroit, Michigan. Wow. And so I made it to Las Vegas. So I was able to fulfill all those dreams. Mm-hmm. I had a couple of children. Well, at 59 years old, I had a heart attack that was disabling. So I'm now disabled. And while I was recovering from that on the couch about a year and a half to 2 years of total nothing. I mean, I just couldn't even, I had no energy. A message that was given to me, because I did a lot of benefit concerts over the years. Mm-hmm. I always tried to help other kids, tried to help families and other kids because I knew what it was like. I did many, many different benefit concerts. And 3 years in a row, I performed for the Lutheran Boys Home in Bay City, Michigan. And the director of the home told me during those 3 years, he said, "Danny, your story needs to be told." And I said, "Well, what do you mean?" He says, "These boys are so impressed that you came from where they are and you made it all the way to where you are." I was also successful in a computer career at both the phone company and in corporate America. I wound up making a six-figure income in computers as well as being a part-time entertainer for 40 years. Okay.
Yeah, wow.
So he told me, "Your story needs to be told." And he had told me that like in 2002, when I had my heart attack in 2013. So I'm on the couch and his voice is echoing, "Your story needs to be heard." And I said, "Well, why?" He said, "Because you're so inspiring." He said, "These kids can see that somebody can actually make it like you have." The counselors are inspired to know that what they're doing matters, because if it wasn't for the group home and foster care and the counselors I had, I could have turned. I could have gotten bitter instead of better, right? Mm-hmm. So while I'm thinking about that, I literally sat down. I had already written out part of my story for my wife, because we had gotten married just a few years before that, because I got divorced earlier. Lena, my wife, is just incredible. She's very supportive. Mm-hmm. I started writing her my story. And then after my heart attack, I decided to write the rest of the story. Mm. And so I wrote my first book. It was released about 2 years ago. And it's called My Journey in the Shadow of the King.
Mm.
And so the king, I originally started out in life wanting to be like the king of rock and roll. Mm. But as I grew older and I got wiser and I had more experiences, I realized it was more important to imitate the King of Kings.
Mm-hmm.
And so my book, My Journey in the Shadow of the King, tells that whole story about all those things. And there's so much more to say. But I wrote that story. And then after that, I've had multiple issues with my heart, because you heard stress kills, right?
Yeah.
Oh, well, guess what? The longer you're under stress, the worse it is and the harder it is on your body. I did go through some divorce issues myself. I did break the cycle. My kids never had to go to foster care, never had any of those issues, and they're quite well now, right? So that was a good thing that came out of this. But I decided, I met a fellow by the name of Dr. John DeGarmo from the Foster Care Institute, and I became a mentee under his program to help go out and connect with foster carers, both foster parents, counselors, CASAs, advocates, you know, people that are helping the kids. And out of his tutelage, out of his meetings that he and I have had, came an idea to help inspire not only the kids, but also the people that are working with the kids.
Mm-hmm.
So my second book, which I just released in December of 2021, is called 99 Days of 100% Encouragement.
Amazing.
And each day I wrote down, I came up with a quote or an inspirational saying. They're not all mine. Probably about 40, 55% of them are mine.
Mm-hmm.
And the others that I came up with are quotes from Mother Teresa. They're quotes from Ben Franklin. They're quotes from Dr. Bruce Duncan Perry and Oprah from the book, What Happened to You?
Mm-hmm.
So I've got all these quotes that come from all these different sources, including myself, because there is a lot of it in here that's mine.
Mm-hmm.
And I put these with a picture, because a picture is worth 1,000 words.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a picture with a saying. And then at the bottom of each page, I have an encouragement exercise called Say It and Share It.
Mm.
And so I give you something to say out loud, and then I give you something to go share with other people for that day's encouraging thought, right? And this book it's caught on so incredibly. This is what it looks like. I don't know if you can see it. I'm sorry. It's blinking out on you.
Yeah.
We'll
put the link.
It's a long pier with a lighthouse at the end of it.
Beautiful.
And the sun, nice, beautiful sigh after a storm, you know. So being a light through the storm is what it's all about. But I got to tell you that I've been on the Facebook groups, and I've been talking with people and trying to encourage people.
Mm-hmm.
And a gentleman heard about my book. He bought a copy. And he took it to his boss, and the organization in San Diego, California, is called Just in Time for Foster Youth.
Mm.
They are a transitional organization that helps the teenagers as they move toward independence and autonomy.
Mm-hmm.
They have a program. They bought 600 copies of this book to put into their program to help encourage the staff and the youth. Because even their staff, 65% of the people that work in their organization have lived experience in foster care or in the child welfare system. So being an encouragement to others has been where my life's work has been. Mm-hmm. Started out with my siblings. I went into entertainment and have encouraged people all those years. And now I can't travel anymore. I can't make personal appearances, but I can get on my computer. I can write, you know, I can encourage. Mm-hmm. And so I've got this book and it's here to help encourage other people.
Thank you so much. And I so echo so many of the things you said. I took my writing seriously after a stroke where I couldn't do all the things I was doing.
Yes.
Could barely talk and barely I couldn't walk. And so, yeah, and writing became my escape. And, you know, although my, you know, I'm able to do much more today, but still it's, I go back to that creative side of myself and it helps me for, you know, cope for a lot of things. And just like you, my faith, you know, carries me and yeah, God helps us to get through those moments. But thank you for not letting your situations crush you by using mm-hmm. them as stepping stones, right?
That's right.
To be able to share that light or the encouragement with others today.
And I have to take off on what you just got done saying about writing, because mm-hmm. one of the day's messages that I put in here is that if you want to feel better, write a letter. Okay. So there's many different programs out there. And one of the things that they recommend is journaling or even sitting down. Cause I took years of counseling. It wasn't all magic. It wasn't all easy.
Yeah.
And it wasn't always daily happiness for me. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. But as I worked through it, one of the things that I learned is as you're writing down, and if you have somebody that you're angry with or you're just totally upset with or whatever, one of the best ways to get that out of your own system is to write a letter. Write it. You don't have to mail it. Mm-hmm. You don't have to actually give it to them.
It's a way to release it. Yeah.
Get it out of yourself. And so writing does that for you and it really helps.
Definitely. Yeah, I definitely agree. I've lived that and also encouraged, you know, my clients doing the same thing and I've seen results for sure.
Yes, it's awesome.
Thank you so, so much for being here today. Thank you for what you're doing for music, for writing and just encouraging others. And we'll make sure to put links to people to reach out to, get your books and stay in touch with you. And any words, I guess, maybe encouragement. I'm just thinking about, that teenage boy who might be in foster care right now and not sure what future will look like. Maybe they're 16, 17, about to age out the system, right? And like, where do I go from here? If any words of encouragement for them.
My encouragement to you is look in the mirror and tell that person that looks back at you in the mirror, you are the person that can make your life happen from here forward. When you finally get to age out or emancipate out, it's going to be up to you. It'll finally be your turn to take control and to be able to do the things that'll get you through this. And I believe in you that you can do it. You believe in you. And if you need help moving forward, come to my website, DannyVan.com, two N's in both names. Come to DannyVan.com. You email me and I'll share with you. I've got literally dozens and dozens of links to free resources to help you through it. I can help you now. There's programs that at 14 years old, there's programs that are ready to help you get ready for college. There's free programs. There's free scholarships. I mean, don't just roll over. Don't get mad. You can't help what people did to you up to this point. They made the decisions. They made the choices. As you become an adult and as you roll into independence, it's now up to you. And go get some help. There's free mentors. There's free life coaches. There's all kinds of programs now. They weren't there when I was going through this. But I'm here. There's many other people. Shu is here. You know, there's all these different, there's programs, Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, UCU.org, YOUSEEYOU.org. Free mentors, free life coaches for life. Doesn't matter how old you are either. They don't age out. So I'm just telling you, just be encouraged and hang in there. It gets better. It gets better.
Yes. Oh, thank you. Definitely in the words that all of us need, no matter what age and no matter what our circumstances are. That's so right. Thank you for sharing that. Thank for you. Everyone watching and listening, you know, what he said, right? I don't have to echo that. Like, I can't follow that, what he said. And right. Yeah, and for all of us, be well.
Yes.
Be well, friends.
Thank you. Thank you.